There are thousands of Irish artefacts sitting inside the British Museum. Some are on display, but many more are locked away in archives, rarely, if ever, seen. From ancient art and religious relics to objects tied to deeply local Irish stories. They've been in London now for decades, in some cases centuries. And the question being asked more and more is it time to get them back? It's News Talk Daily, I'm Ciara Doherty. Well, there's been a growing push to re-examine where cultural objects belong and how they got there in the first place. Because while some Irish artefacts in Britain were bought and sold very legitimately, others passed through the hands of landlords and collectors and empire. And even where ownership is legal, let's face it, the ethics aren't always so clear. At the same time, we've got to put out, we here in Ireland aren't entirely on the moral high ground. Our own museums hold thousands of objects from other parts of the world, many acquired during that same imperial period. So if we're saying, give us back our stuff, do we also have to give some back ourselves? Well, Professor Laura McTackney from the School of the Human Environment at UCC joins me now. Laura, you're very welcome to News Talk Daily.
Hi, nice to speak to you.
I suppose what people are going to want to know first and foremost is, what have they got?
Well, they've got a lot of stuff. We could take our whole talk just talking about the range of things that they have in the British Museum. But just to give you some kind of overview of it, one of my colleagues, Robert Chappell, who's an archaeologist who's based in Belfast now, did some research between 2018 and 2020 on how many Irish objects were in the British Museum. And he even said himself he had regrets about that afterwards because it took him so much time. But he created a list of objects from every single county, and he only included ones that had a, an actual geographical designation that he could find. So if it just said Ireland, they weren't included. Nothing after the 17th century was included, and no coins were included. And he still had over 1,700 objects, 806 of those from Antrim, actually, which is by far the biggest. But we really have a range of everything from deep prehistory, where we have a lot of, stone axes and lots of different types of stone objects, particularly Ulm stones and things like that, through to beautiful gold artifacts from the Bronze Age and Iron Age. And then we have lots and lots of medieval, what they consider Celtic art, but lots of for example, bell shrines from Tipperary. We have again more high crosses and stuff from Kerry. There's just a completely huge range of stuff. You really couldn't even define it down into small groups of things.
And what's really notable about this, I suppose, Laura, and what probably really gets under people's wick, is that a notable portion of these items aren't on permanent display. Many of them are held in storage or maybe rotating collections accessible primarily to researchers rather than the general public.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually the story of most museums, particularly ones that are older. So the British Museum is like an 18th century museum. It's one of the oldest public museums in the world, and they have a gigantic collection. So to the point that at least 90% of their objects aren't on display just because they have so much stuff. And that's because, often museums have acquisition policies where they want to take certain things on or they have to take certain things. So they would often take a lot of archaeological material from excavations that they're not planning to take, but they just take them because they turn up. And I mean, they end up not taking them out of their collection. There's very few museums have very active deaccessioning policies. So even stuff that they would take, 100 years ago, 50 years ago, they mightn't take now, but they don't get rid of them either. So that means that there's just a lot of stuff. But also a lot of stuff is not, particularly interesting. A lot of stuff is not particularly attractive, or members of the public wouldn't be that interested, or it's replicated over and over again. So there's lots of reasons why, not all, just because, they don't prioritise Irish archaeology, but just a lot of it is kind of replicated material too.
Yeah, and it's a really good point to make there, that even if we did get all this stuff back, it's not like we would suddenly put it all on display in our museums in Ireland either.
No, definitely not. Because as I say, all museums have, most of their collections are not on display. And as I say, primarily that is because we often have a lot of the same types of objects, and often they're not, they're of interest to archaeologists, but they mightn't be of interest to the general public, and, maybe not particularly interesting or attractive. A lot of bits of flint and, you know, Stone Age axes, which might look kind of interesting in one or two, but you maybe don't need hundreds of them. You know, we do tend to focus on things like the National Museum and the beautiful gold that we have from prehistory, and there's a lot of that which isn't on display either. So, like, some of the material definitely would be displayed if it was back here, but particularly if it moved around from the National Museum to local museums, you know, if the objects went back to the places where they came from, then I could imagine there would be a lot more of it on display.
When people hear this, right, I think the instinct is, well, it's ours, give it back, right? But it's really not that simple, is it?
No, it's not, because, you know, a lot of this stuff was taken, as you said, under lots of different circumstances, and really we have to deal with them on a case-by-case basis. So, like, as we know, before independence, there was a colonial relationship between Ireland and Britain, and that does kind of frame a lot of how these objects, you know, came about being discovered. We sometimes put in inverted commas being discovered, because often people knew it was there. It's discovered by people who want to take it away. But, you know, sometimes that's by, you know, local, you know, Irish people would have found the objects and they would have had to, or they decided to give it to local landowners who then officially owned the land. Some of them still do. And, you know, then that was theirs to do with whatever they wished. So they had legal ownership of it and they could sell it onwards. Some of it would have been found and it would have been sold on the black market. So that would have, you know, been money that went into pockets of local people, but often not a huge amount of money. So there is all these issues about, like, what is a legal kind of agreement in a colonial context? Because obviously the power relations there and the, you know, who has the money and who doesn't have the money really affect what that means. And some people would argue there's no really legitimate legal documents whenever you're talking about those exchanges. But essentially, there's a lot of different circumstances, and some are well documented, some less. So, you know, we have some quite important artifacts that just disappeared. And then some of them have randomly came back or been found again, but others could have just been, you know, particularly with things like gold and silver, could have just been melted down, and we'll never find those artifacts again.
The Fianna Fáil TD, Cathal Crowe, when he was discussing this, said, look, he recognised some of them were acquired very legitimately, is what he said. But he said other items were plundered or brought back by British troops, which is not something I would imagine he's a great fan of. Is that right?
Yeah, I mean, one of the most famous cases is General Pitt Rivers, who was a soldier who was stationed in Ireland, actually in Cork, from 1862 to 1866. And he's known as a very prolific archaeologist, and actually he did do really interesting archaeological work, but he also just took a lot of stuff back with him. There's at least 20,000 objects which were brought from the southwest of Ireland in particular. And some of them ended up in the British Museum. A lot of them ended up in the Pitt Rivers Museum, which is the main archaeological museum in Oxford. And, you know, they just have a huge range of objects. And some of them are, you know, kind of lots of archaeological stuff that nobody would have known was there until they excavated them. So you can see Pitt Rivers was doing something which we would recognise now as a legitimate academic pursuit. And, you know, maybe those things would have disappeared. Maybe they would have been thrown away, not looked after, if he hadn't have taken them. But some of them are quite meaningful objects. You know, they were religious objects. They were, you know, Ulam stones, which often marked, you know, significant sites because they were connected to ancient burials. And some of them, you know, people have asked for them back over time. And even though the Pitt Rivers Museum has a very extensive decolonization and deaccessioning policy, they don't really recognize Ireland as a colonized place. And so they don't really use those policies for Irish objects.
And I know you feel that that's a real blind spot in this debate. I mean, you talk about sort of requests that have gone in the past for these items to be brought back to Ireland or to be loaned to Ireland. And a lot of time they're sort of met with a, no, I'm afraid we're just not going to do that response. There's a really interesting story down in Tipperary, isn't there, from 1993, this request for St Cullen's Bell Shrine that I think really brings this story to life and maybe helps people understand why this is not just a historical issue, why for a lot of people it's quite an emotional issue.
Yeah, no, like particularly I think religious objects, because often these were taken in the 19th century, and it's not, and even after the time that the penal laws are not longer active, so Catholicism is, you know, legal, people are allowed to be Catholic. Before that, you know, the objects, you know, there can be again a legal question about that. But, you know, often there's a sense that these are meaningful things that were spiritually connected to people that are removed from them and put into a museum, where often they're not on display. And these really are important objects to bring back to communities. There's often memories of those in the community. And as I said, I know of a colleague who, you know, works in England, and she comes from a small town in Kerry, and she said their local town requested to get their high cross back from Pitt Rivers Museum, and it was rejected. And that was again in the last kind of decade as well. So even though they're very good at promoting certain types of repatriation, I think just the scale and the, you know, extent of Irish objects in British museums, not just the British Museum, is actually something that they find very hard to come to terms with, because that could be, you know, a large and significant amount of materials moving back over the Irish Sea.
There is this bell shrine, St Coolin's bell shrine, which we think dates back to the 11th or 12th century. It came from County Tipperary and it was sold to the British Museum in 1854 for £11 by an antiquarian. And in 1993, there was this request, wasn't there, from the local community to have it returned on loan for a parish centenary, but it was refused.
Yeah.
On security grounds.
Yes, and the British Museum particularly have quite strong policies about this. And, you know, often we know of the famous case of the Elgin or Parthenon marbles, which has, you know, been an ongoing contestation with Greece for a long time. And their kind of reasoning is that they're a universal museum and they're really there to display all these things from all around the world in one space. And they don't want to, as a point of policy, either loan things out or give them back, because they don't want what they consider the floodgates to open. And then, you know, thousands and thousands of requests to come. And I think that's what the issue is, that different museums have different policies about this, and some of them will, you know, consider these requests and others will not. And, you know, at the minute, just the British Museum also legally, you know, have it in their statutes that they can't give anything back. And obviously laws can be changed, but at the minute they hold over that they don't want to change those laws and regulations, and that's just, you know, the objects that are there are going to stay there. So, you know, that really is a question about kind of moral and ethical kind of ownership as well then.
Well, that goes, doesn't it, to the St Cullen's Bell Shrine, because it was sold legitimately to the British Museum. They paid a sum of money from it. It was handed over by an antiquarian who had it in his possession. So you could say that legally they are entitled to it. They did buy it. It's the moral question maybe that people have more of a difficulty with.
Yeah, no, and that's, just, you know, as I was saying, around the kind of colonial context. Whenever you're looking at a colonial context, there is a question about how legal anything, like particularly removal of, you know, important artefacts like that, and spiritual artefacts, which are, you know, more important in some ways because they're connected to people's, you know, ideas of themselves going back centuries, but also about, you know, their connections to ancestry and to the land as well. So, I mean, they're often kind of considered outside of those rules, really, because colonialism, we don't really know what pressures were exerted on people to have to hand over those. Like £11 doesn't sound like a huge amount of money, even for the 19th century. You know, some of these are really beautiful, very, you know, detailed artifacts with amazing craftsmanship. Like, they're very important artifacts in their own right, as well as religious and spiritually important too. So I think all of those things really kind of push towards the moral and ethical, you know, aspects of whether legal ownership is the only way that we really assess, you know, what ownership is.
A receipt doesn't make it ethical, you think?
Oh, yes, totally.
We've seen protests around this, even NECAP putting stolen from Ireland stickers on artefacts in London.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting because this has become a bigger issue. I think probably the film Black Panther inspired a lot of this, because, you know, they had a scene in it with, you know, where they were kind of going to take one of their objects back. And so this is kind of seen as a very strong visual for decolonization. But of course, in other countries, this process is a lot further down the line as well. So often the problem is within a European context that we see colonialism as something that happens outside of Europe. And there hasn't really been a kind of clear understanding of how colonial relationships existed within Europe. So, you know, the relationship between Britain and Ireland, for example, the relationship in the Iberian Peninsula between Spain and Portugal, the relationship even in Scandinavia between Denmark, Sweden and Norway. You know, at times they were colonial relationships and objects moved around with that. And often those are kind of uncomfortable things for the, you know, museums that retain them to kind of grapple with. Maybe this is a material indicator of a colonial relationship that they haven't really acknowledged. Even if it's acknowledged by the people who it was taken from.
There is an uncomfortable bit to all this too, isn't there? Because we in Ireland also hold artefacts from other countries and other cultures.
Yeah, no, we, like, you know, a lot of museums in Ireland, not just the National Museum, but many of the local museums as well, hold objects that were brought from other places. And often, you know, it's often kind of brought more through trade networks, but also Irish people were involved in British colonialism and other forms of colonialism too. So even though colonialism is a big kind of structural model and we think about it as government, you know, there's people who are involved in those movements of things. And so we have to acknowledge when we have objects in our collections, and some of those are considered anthropology rather than archaeology. So they might be, you know, kind of objects that came from the Pacific Islands or objects that came from like Aboriginal people in Australia. They might be put in a collection where we consider those like, you know, this is just objects that tell us about how other people lived, but they're meaningful to other people. They were often taken under similar circumstances of colonial kind of duress where we don't know if they, you know, really wanted those objects to be given away, even if money is paid for them. So there has been projects done, I know, in the Ulster Museum in particular, the National Museum, at looking at their collections and trying to assess, you know, what kind of colonial relationships they reveal. But it is something we have to think about, that we're entangled in this as well as being victims of it.
So within the National Museum of Ireland, there's 15,000 artefacts from outside of Ireland. Do we know, has there been requests put in from other countries for those to be returned? And what's the response been?
There has been, you know, individual cases where objects have been asked to be returned. I know, for example, from my own university that an Egyptian mummified body was returned. I know from Limerick there's been objects returned from there. And I know from the Ulster Museum they have too. I'm sure the National Museum have returned objects too. But often these are done at a very slow pace and it's very piecemeal, you know, small numbers of objects, and often there's quite a long process of negotiation because, you know, you have to also be sure that the people who are claiming the objects, you know, have the right to do so. You have to ensure that they're representing a community that want these objects back. And often there's a kind of emphasis on, you know, whether they have actually the right kind of conditions to keep these objects, which, you know, there has been debate about whether that's something that we should be asking, because and not all these objects were made to be retained forever. You know, they're often made to be destroyed or made to go in graves or whatever that might be. So maybe having to move from one museum to another is actually not what the role of those objects are going to have. And that's been tackled a lot more in, say, the United States, where objects have been given back to Indigenous communities and they've been allowed to decide what to do with those. So, you know,
like what? Do you have examples of that, Laura?
Yeah. I mean, I've got a lot of colleagues who work in the States and a lot of universities there which have a lot of museums. So they've pretty much got rid of most of their collections that, you know, are connected to human remains. So a lot of museums and a lot of universities have historical collections of human remains, which they've taken either from local populations or from other, you know, kind of colonized contexts. And I know in the States, like I've got colleagues who work in a lot of museums at universities, like they've essentially tried to find out where those bodies came from, tried to find out where the you know, if the kind of Indigenous group still exists, and they have repatriated them to them and they've been allowed to rebury them. And that, obviously, human remains are a special category, but objects are given back as well. And particularly objects that were not, you know, created to be retained, that were created to be deposited with bodies or just, you know, were made of organic materials, just not expected to last. They've been allowed to, you know, transition those into whatever ceremony they want to. And that means sometimes that they're destroyed. And that, again, is giving, you know, control away from the museum and giving it back to the people who the objects were taken from.
So the global trend seems to suggest that there is this increasing pressure towards repatriation of these artefacts. If we fast forward 10 or 20 years, do you think we will see more of the treasures within the British Museum back here in Ireland?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, the British Museum is a special case because it was, you know, it has this kind of legal relationship with the British state, and part of it is it's not supposed to, you know, kind of give back any of its objects. But I think that could change over time. And we should really look at people like in France. The Sar Savoy report, which was published in 2018, was a report that, you know, indicated that there should be repatriation of African colonial objects that had a connection, which were in French museums because of French colonial relationships, should be returned. And I mean, that's quite a long time now. We're, you know, kind of 8 years after that. And that only this week, they have put through new legislation to try to simplify that process, because often there's all sorts of legal wranglings about, you know, how did we get these objects? How legal were they? Who has the right to take them back? What happens to them? And I think it's got to the point that they realise if they want, you know, to remove these large numbers of objects, which, you know, have been requested back by lots of African nations, then they need to take the red tape away and actually say, you know what, we can't control what you do with these objects. We know they came from this particular place at this particular time. We should just give them back. And that will probably cause its own issues in itself, because then you'll have wranglings within countries about, you know, where objects go to as well and what happens to them. But, you know, the decision has been made in other places that objects taken in colonial context shouldn't be retained, and that they, if they're requested back, they should be given back.
Professor Laura McAtackney from UCC, thanks so much for joining us on News Talk Daily today.
No problems, thank you.
If you have any thoughts on repatriating Irish treasures, get in touch. It's a time to recapture our ancient history, or is possession really nine-tenths of the law? Drop me an email, newstalkdaily@newstalk.com, or get me on Instagram @officialKiraD. Until Monday morning, take care. Goodbye.